But diligence in sowing seed and being mindful of the dark days to come can help to prepare us for their coming. The chapter ends with the young man being encouraged to rejoice, letting his heart cheer him. He is told to walk in the ways of his heart and in the sight of his eyes, yet with the knowledge that God will hold him accountable for all that he does. So remove sorrow and otherwise be rejoiceful, but also put away evil during the fleeting years of childhood and youth. Any comments or questions about the opening? Who would like to read Ecclesiastes 11? It's only 10 verses. Ecclesiastes 11, 1 through 10. Shane?
Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will find it again. Give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. If clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there will it lie. Whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in a mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. Sow your seed in the morning, and at evening let not your hands be idle, for you do not know which will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do equally well. Light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years a man may live, let him enjoy them all. But let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything to come is meaningless. Be happy, young man, while you are young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart, and whatever your eyes see, but know that for all these things, God will bring you to judgment. So then banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigor are meaningless.
Okay, thanks, Shane. So let's start off on, let's unpack this verse 1. And this is probably one of the most misunderstood understood would be the good word for it. Of this chapter, what do you think is meant by casting your bread upon the waters? Now, if you have a, depends on your translation, it may actually say it a little bit different. But the gist is casting your bread upon the waters in verse 1. What does that mean? Shane?
I've always taken it to mean to be generous with your actions.
Okay.
Giving without knowing what's going to happen to the gift, right?
Okay.
It's like you have something, your bread,
okay,
and you're casting it out with a generous spirit, even though you don't really know where it's going to go on the water.
Okay. Anybody else have a thought? A different thought?
The message actually says,
okay.
The message actually says, be generous, invest in charity yields high returns.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else?
Pay it forward.
You got what?
Pay it forward.
Pay it forward. Okay.
And it'll come back to you.
All right.
Submit to doing things on God's schedule and His timetable, not your own.
Okay. There's one view that says it has to do with international commerce. If you have Good News translation, it says, ship your grain across the sea. After many days, you will receive a return. I'm sorry. It says, invest your money in foreign trade, and one of these days, you will make a profit. Does anybody have a version of the NIV that says, ship your grain across the sea?
No.
Okay. No? But yeah. Yeah. Some versions of a New International will say, ship your grain across the sea. Another view is that it is a metaphor for being generous, and that's what Shane's kindly said. Even if a return seems unlikely, if you have the contemporary English, it says be generous and someday you will be rewarded. The easy to read version says do good wherever you go. After a while, the good you do will come back to you. But the general feeling is casting bread upon the waters invokes the law of sowing and reaping. The seed in this case is one's acts of goodness. There will be a harvest in heaven, if not in this world. The point that Solomon makes is more than we should sow goodness in order to reap a future harvest. The idea is for us to become people who would do good for goodness' sake, irrespective of the harvest. And finally, if you cast your bread upon the waters, you do something good or take a risk, usually without expecting very much in return. Some comments I found in commentaries. Anybody else want to add to that? Have a question about that?
To me, this verse has always just had that meaning to it, in the sense that, you know, because a lot of times as people we'll focus on, I'll give to this thing, to this company, to this,
yeah,
to this. And so we're very specific because we're going to give to this because they're going to do that. Right?
Like our kids to kids. We give money to Paul. He's going to buy these goats, give them to these widows.
And this verse is really more saying, just give to give. Even
okay,
if you don't know what the end result's going to be, just give to give, and that be your mindset. And so, to me, that's really the thing I always take away from this verse is giving is an attitude.
Yeah.
So give without realizing what the end result's going to be. Just be that person who casts your bread upon.
We're not always responsible for what that money does, do we, when we give to something? Or are we? Or should we be?
Well, and I this is one of those verses that I go back to in my own mind.
Okay.
Because, you know, like that guy who's asking for money on a corner.
Yeah.
Right? I've had people say to me, well, don't give him money because he's just going to go buy drugs.
Yeah.
And I get that argument.
Yeah.
And I'm not disputing it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, me giving him money, what he does with it,
that's on him. That's on him, yeah.
I need to be the type of person who's willing to give in the first place, right? And to me, that's
giving. Well, how about the verse in Matthew 7:6? It says, don't cast your pearls before the swine.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. is this like the opposite of that, Bernard?
That's why you ask first.
Ask what they're going to do with it first? Yeah.
I used to work with benevolence.
Yeah.
And that after a while, you learn to ask the person. And there were several people that said, yeah, I'm going to get a drink. So we didn't yield.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they were honest in what they wanted to do, I'll ask them, well, I'll take you to get something.
Yeah.
To
me. And I've done that.
You
yeah.
know that person is really needed.
Yeah.
So, but you learn the technique.
Yeah, that was my dad's philosophy. Someone came up to him, asked him for money. He said, you know, I need a couple of dollars to get me something to eat. He said, well, come on, I'll buy you something to eat. Usually they say, no, that's okay, and they'll turn around. But, I mean, I've even had somebody say, okay. And I take them in Subway, bought them a sandwich, and I sat there with them while they ate it. So I know they ate it, you know.
We had a situation where I was preaching, and somebody came to the restaurant.
When I lived in Opelika, Alabama, which is next to Auburn, usually people know where Auburn is, they don't know where Opelika is. We had one deacon who owned a gas station, another deacon who owned a restaurant. So these beggars would come to the church building, you know, wanting some money, wanting gas to get from, this was always interesting, to get from South Florida to Texas, and they come up through Alabama, the center part of Alabama, which anyway. But anyway, the secretary said, okay, go down there to the Texaco station, he'll fill you up, then go down to James Brown's restaurant, and he'll give you a meal. Well, that usually turned them off too, so. But anyway. But no, you're right, Shane. To some degree, we're not responsible for where that money goes. But on the other hand, we do need to be a steward to God's things. So
again, I get back to me, verse 1 is about an attitude about the way you
live. Okay.
It's about being generous in all that you do, even when you can't see the end.
Right, when you may not see the end result. Yeah. So what benefit comes from casting your bread on the water? What's the benefit of doing that? Verse 1 again.
You may receive a return.
That's right.
You might.
You don't know.
Perhaps.
And you may not see it. you may, the turn may come later. So.
And here's, to me, this is one of the great things of God, is I may not see the returns of the bread that I cast upon the waters, but I will most definitely see the returns of the bread cast on the waters by someone else.
Could be, yeah.
And so that's, to me, that's the strength of this verse.
Yeah.
If it's God's people live with this attitude, then all that bread impacts all these other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inevitable that it will. When we all do it, we'll all impact each other many times without even realizing.
Yeah.
I've been impacted by the gifts of others who love God. They didn't know, but it impacted my life.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the opposite has happened.
Yeah. Right? It's like planting the seed of Scripture, of God's Word. We're told to plant the seed. That doesn't mean we'll ever see the harvest. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't.
I suppose it just said you will receive a return, that may motivate insincere motivation of gratitude.
Yeah, yeah.
You actually give expecting.
Expecting, yeah. Yeah.
A lot of time what happens, if you do something for someone else, they might go back and tell someone else, well, that person did that for me, and it will motivate that person. So we can't see that.
No,
so
that not always.
That we don't know that's happening.
Yeah, yeah. No, a lot of times we don't see that.
Right.
So look at number 3. So what do you think Solomon meant when he said it was wise to divide this bread with 7 or 8? Why did he say divide it between 7 or 8? Invest in several. And what'd you say, Kevin?
Don't put all your eggs.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spread the wealth, and I put wealth in quotations. Spread the news.
Diversify.
Yep. So what is the point of these two admonitions? Casting your bread on the water and then divide your bread with 7 or 8. What is the point of all this?
Blessed to give and receive.
All right, that's part of it.
Don't quit.
Don't quit. Be liberal, be generous, for it may help you during difficult days in the future. What would that mean? Help you during difficult days in the future. He talks about it later, about the light, doesn't he? Being beneficial. To be liberal and generous in your benevolence, for it may help you during difficult days in the future. In other words, the end result hopefully would be better than, even though the end result may not come till tomorrow, it's better than today. Any comments? Questions? I see some look on some faces. So in verse 3, what two random natural occurrences are spoken of? What's he talking about in verse 3?
Rain falling and a tree falling.
All right. Clouds full of rain will empty themselves on the earth, and where a tree falls, there it will lie. Now when it falls, does that mean does it make a sound? I just thought I'd throw that out. So what would clouds full of rain and fallen trees represent? What does that represent?
Just keep going about your business.
Okay. But it breaks it down even more than that, though, doesn't it? What do you think about when you see clouds? Little puffy marshmallow thingies? Are they heavy?
But these two things are just nature, and we cannot do anything about what God gives us in nature.
Would clouds indicate blessings?
Well, the blessing of rain.
Okay.
Yeah, because as Jesus said, it rains on the just and the unjust alike.
Yeah,
So the blessing of rain falls through nature regardless.
Right. And would fallen trees represent disaster of some sort?
Sometimes.
Okay. And again, disaster falls on the good and the bad, right? We've talked about that before. So how do these things relate to the farmer or investing? I think someone alluded to it earlier. How would these relate to the farmer or investing? Does the farmer have control over the rain?
No.
Okay.
He doesn't have control over how much rain, because that could be a problem too.
Yeah. You can get too much rain, and your crops get moldy or whatever.
Invest in hydroelectric or timber.
Or crypto.
Or timber.
Yeah, timber. Yeah, the basic answer is you have no control of the outcome. Even with investing, most of the time you have no control over it. You know, we don't control what the stock market does. We just play the game. So in verse 4, what does the preacher caution against?
Doing nothing because you're afraid of
God. Okay. Watching the wind and clouds to the neglect of sowing and reaping. If you pay attention to the clouds that promise to bring blessings on an agricultural society, you won't reap. In other words, if you keep just watching the clouds, you won't get the work done.
The world always provides you a good excuse not to do what you're supposed to do.
Always something gets in the way. So what do verses 3 and 4 tell us about where our focus and effort needs to be? Verse 3 and 4 tell us where our effort focus and effort needs to be.
I always take it to mean that you should do what you can do and not be worried about things that you can't control.
Okay.
It's the old adage, right? I mean, there are things under your control. You should actively do those things.
Right.
There are things that aren't under your control, and you just have to accept both the good and the bad that comes from those things.
Just go with the flow. Connie, do you say something?
No, just like I said before, keep going about your own business.
Yeah, yeah, that's what Shane was saying. Number 10, what is the danger of waiting until things are perfect before taking action? Verse 4.
They never happen.
Exactly. Perfect time never comes. Always something, isn't it? Young couple gets married. They're talking about starting a family. Well, we'll wait till we can afford it. Well, I heard something the other day. It says $300,000 to raise a child up through college or something like that. Did y'all hear that?
Yeah.
Do what, Jim?
Through high school.
Is it through high school?
Through high school, yeah.
The college is never another $100,000, depending on where you go.
Junior college.
Tech school. Let's send them to tech school. Anyway, no, the point is, verse 4, the perfect time never comes. So, we just do what we need to do and not worry about it.
We're referring to those in good old days.
Huh?
Perfect. Good old days. They've already happened.
Yeah. So what two examples illustrate our limited ability to comprehend the ways of God? Verse 5. What are the two examples to illustrate our limited ability?
The wind and babies.
Okay. Can we control the wind? Okay. And what's the second one? Verse 5? Yeah. How a child is born or how a child grows in the womb. So.
All this time here, still in 2022, they can't predict exactly when that baby will come.
Exactly.
They
can try. They can try to help it along sometimes,
yeah.
But even then.
But it just happens when it happens.
Yeah. So what can people not comprehend, verse 5? What can we not comprehend? We're just not able to, I don't think.
The works of God.
The work of God, yep. We do not know the works of God, and that's just like you don't understand the path of the wind or how bones grow in the womb. And we do not understand time and space, do we, David Bailey?
Not completely.
So how does the preacher... I'm sorry, did you say something, Marie? Okay.
Actually, I had a thought this week. After you sent me your link...
My video, yeah.
I still haven't seen it, but I had a thought, you know, how will we know about time and space when we cross that threshold? And it's kind of like, you know, look at a building you've driven past for 20 years, but you've never been inside. You take a single step through the door, suddenly you realize a lot of things about that building you've never known before.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what it's going to be like when we cross that threshold. We're going to look around and see things. We're going to think, oh, okay, so that's a big room up there. There's a sanctuary up there. There's a fellowship hall back there.
Yeah.
There's some apartment buildings in the back. You know, you don't know what's in there until you go in. But,
yeah.
And that doesn't mean we're going to know the price of rice in China. I mean, we're going to know everything. But
yeah.
It does reveal a lot once we step through.
Does anyone like to go to open houses,
yeah.
You know, and just to see what the house looks like? You picture it in your mind. Like David says, you look at it from the outside, so you try to picture it in your mind, so then you go inside, and it's completely different than what you expected it to be. So, Shane?
I once read an article about the discovery of the God particle, which was very interesting and enlightening. But the big takeaway that I took when I got to the end of it was so much effort, so much equipment, so much time and difficulty spent just for mankind to discover the existence of this small particle, and then to think that that particle has always been there since the beginning.
Yeah.
Because God put it there.
Yeah.
And how many thousands of years did it take us just to see it?
Just to find it or discover it, yeah.
Not that we understand it,
yeah.
But that we can see it.
Yeah. I've seen video similar, probably the same one you have. So number 14, why does he encourage diligence and benevolence in verse 6? Why does he encourage diligence and benevolence? Why is he telling us to spread our bread on the water?
We never know which thing will be successful.
Yeah, we don't know for which two will prosper, perhaps even both. So, let's do both of them and see what happens. So, let's go to number 16. What is described as sweet and pleasant in verse 7? What does he describe as sweet and pleasant? The light, the sun, talks about the sun. How is light sweet? I thought chocolate cake was sweet, but how's light sweet? Bless you, Joanne.
We climbed through a cave for a few days.
Yeah. That's for sure.
It's hard to find your way in the dark.
It is. The reality is that both light and the sun are pleasant. It's good to be alive. While you have the light, rejoice in the light. Enjoy your youth because darkness is coming. It's a commentary. So if one is blessed to live many joyful years, what should he still bear in mind? In verse 8. There will be dark days. The darkness is coming, or days of darkness is coming. But also remember, there's nothing permanent about life under the sun. In other words, here on earth. So even though you may have some dark days, the light will come. May not seem like it at the time, but it will come. Number 18, what does the preacher encourage the young man to do? Verse 9. Rejoice. What else?
Let your heart cheer.
Okay. All right. And one more.
Enjoy your youth.
All right. That's not what I'm looking for. But walk in the ways of his heart and in the sight of his eyes. That's the third one. So rejoice in the youth. Let your heart cheer the days of your youth. And then walk in the ways of your heart. What does the preacher encourage him to remember? Verse 9. Exactly. Yeah. You know, be careful what you do because you will be judged for it.
Like, eat, drink, and be merry, but...
But, yeah. Is this... car?
It doesn't seem like the rest of the Bible.
Is Solomon using some sarcasm here? Could he be using some sarcasm?
Perhaps.
Perhaps? Any comments?
I guess I don't really see it as sarcasm necessarily.
Okay.
But I think he's encouraging them that they should enjoy life, that they should live life. But to me, there's the little added twist of, but you know, be, you know, follow God.
Yeah. Right?
So it's enjoy life, but remember, God is the judge. So to me, it's a enjoy life with a caution. So
okay.
I guess I don't really necessarily see it as sarcastic.
Does anyone have the translation that says, "And follow the sights of your heart and the evil desires of your eyes"? Does anyone have that translation? It's New American Standard with footnotes is where that comes from. But yet, then it finishes out, yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So that's why that's the reason I asked about the sarcasm, because he says, that, you know, go out and follow the evil desires of your heart, but you may be punished for it, or you will be punished for it. That's where my thought of sarcasm comes in. So. Exactly, yeah. It may come back and bite you later. So.
Pay now or pay later.
Exactly.
Cannot be irresponsible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the last one, what is it that the young are to remove from their heart? Verse 10.
Anxiety.
Okay. Sorrow, anxiety. And what does it tell you at the end? I'm sorry?
Put it away.
Put away evil from his flesh. Remove sorrow from his heart and put away evil from his flesh. And why was he told to do that? Childhood and youth are vanity or fleeting. And that's the whole theme of Ecclesiastes, isn't it? Everything is meaningless or vanity, vapor, hibbo, I think, is the Hebrew name, Hebrew word. Any questions or comments about my questions?
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
My version doesn't say that this is for youth in verse 10. You said, what is it that the young are to remember?
Yeah, what is it that the young are to remove from their heart?
I'm going to address the young.
Okay. Well, it says, New American says, so remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. That's the New American Standard. What have you got? That's where I'm getting.
I think that's addressed. It's even more important for me as an older woman to see, yeah.
But in my...
In my
defense, Marie, I use the word young. Young is relative, right?
I think verses 9 and 10 are intended to take it together.
And yeah.
It,
yeah.
The original address is to
yeah.
Young.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of.
Yeah.
For
9 and 10, it's a continuation. Kevin?
I find verse 11 very encouraging for us who are older. I know that's relative.
Verse 11.
What is
chapter 11. He meant chapter 11.
I think it varies as we get older. But anyway, yeah. I think it's very encouraging because well, it says that, youth and vigor are meaningless. And as we look at the world, they put a huge value on youth and vigor. Almost all the commercials we have the beautiful people, young people, that are promoted.
Are what they're selling makes us look and feel younger.
Right. Or the athletic, the virile, and a lot of older people pine for that. Mm-hmm. They're seeking that. They find anxiety because they don't have that. And I think this tells us that there's no need to do that. It's meaningless.
Yeah.
Youth and vigor is meaningless. Cast off your anxieties. Cast off your bodily troubles.
Yeah.
So anyway, I gain encouragement from that.
Okay, good. We all should, shouldn't we? So in conclusion, to be diligent is to persevere and remain steadfast at one's task. When the task is hard, there's the temptation to quit. But the one who is diligent remains at his post and does not cease from his labor. Diligence is such a great virtue because you do not know. Diligence requires trust. As a Christian, one must trust in God. Our job is to believe Him, obey Him, and keep His commandments. It is not our job to constantly question Him. Wisdom is respecting the one who has authority and being diligent at our work. If we are faithful, one day we will know. To summarize chapter 11, whoever watches the clouds will never reap. You do not know what will prosper, even your youth. But know that God will judge you. I'm sorry, enjoy your youth. But know that God will judge you. And Chris Juby is the one who puts those together. And as Numbers 32:23 says, paraphrased, your sin will find you out. Any comments, questions about what we've gone over today? Okay, I'm only 15 minutes late, so we're doing good. Next week, and if you go to the family meeting, you'll hear more about next week in the family meeting. Not next week, but 2 weeks. Normally, we're going to cut this off next week. But because in September, Gary and David Lehman were going to do a tag team. Gary was going to his sermons were going to be on a certain topic, and David Lehman was going to talk about that in class. They have let Gary be off on Labor Day Sunday. So that threw David Lehman off. So they asked me to stretch Ecclesiastes another week. So I've gone in and split chapter 12. So we'll do verses 1 through 8 of chapter 12 next week. And then Labor Day Sunday, we'll do 9 through 14 and finish up Ecclesiastes. So I am not doing the sermon.
Hey, before you completely dismiss.
Okay.